You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Good morning. The government's $700 billion financial bailout is going to be discussed in a big way on Capitol Hill today. The big three automakers are pleading for $25 billion in loans, and it's all coming to a head. But is it money well spent? If you had all that money, what would you tell Congress to do with it right now? Should homeowners get the money, the auto industry? Who most needs a bailout? Give us a call, 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake at thetakeaway.org. Catherine Lanfer is in for John Hockenberry today. Good morning, Catherine.
Hey, Adora. All of this talk about the economy and politics, it's let us lose sight of some other things going on. Did you know that North America is facing one of its worst ecological disasters in recorded history? How's that, huh?
Pretty
Wake
intense.
You up a little? Yeah. The mountain pine beetle. This is a bug that is native to the region, is killing millions of acres of pine forests. Warmer winters, the way humans use the land, have all allowed the appetite of this beetle to go unchecked. Now, we've got with us today Jim Robbins. He is a journalist who wrote a piece for today's Science Times and today's New York Times about this mountain pine beetle infestation. Jim, first of all, can you talk about where in North America this is happening? What swath of the continent are we looking at?
Well, it's happening virtually from the southern Rockies all the way up to British Columbia and the northern Rockies through Colorado, Wyoming, and Montana, where I live. And it's hit in varying degrees in different places. And in the United States, Colorado is probably the worst state hit. Virtually, in a few years, virtually all of the high-altitude mountain lodgepole pine will be gone. And in Canada, British Columbia has probably been hit the hardest of all.
You know, it's sort of hard to wrap your mind around these numbers. The largest known insect infestation in the history of North America? Give me something that helps me get a sense of the scale.
Well, if you stand on a mountaintop in Colorado, you can look in every direction virtually in some places and see dead trees. I mean, it is everywhere. I live in Montana. I can stand on my front porch and look out and see probably a third of the trees across the valley dead and red on the mountainside. When they die, they turn from green to red, and it's a pretty striking color difference between a dead tree and a live tree, and it's very sobering.
Wow. All right. And this beetle, tell me about this beetle. What does it look like? What's the biology? Why is it hungry?
It's small and black in its adult stage. It's about the tip of your finger. It fit on the tip of your little finger. And it flies to a tree. It burrows in through the bark, and it lays eggs. And then when this rice grain-sized larva hatches, it burrows into the cambium, which is what it eats, and the cambium is that thin sheet of tissue between the bark and the wood part of the tree. And what that does is it cuts the nutrients off that the tree takes up from the ground and sends up to the crown. And so essentially it cuts the lifeline off that the tree has for feeding itself. And then those grubs hatch, and then they fly onto other trees. So it becomes this kind of exponential progress as they grow to adulthood and then fly off to other trees. And you can see year after year, you see one tree, then you see 10, and then you see 100. And so it's a steady growth into the forest, and the trees turn red.
And this steady growth has essentially led to some campgrounds being closed, some ski resorts, lumber yards losing money. What's the effort to do something about these beetles?
It's very difficult. I mean, it's really hard to salvage this wood because it's after it's killed by the beetle, it's very light and it's hard to use structurally. It gets a blue stain that the bugs inject into it to stop the sap from rising, and that stain makes the wood worthless. Now, some furniture makers are using that blue stain as kind of an enhanced value for their product, but really it's a tough sell for 2x4s and those kinds of things.
Jim, how do you kill the beetles?
Well, you don't. Nature has to kill the beetles. It has to get really cold. It has to get 25, 30, 35 below zero for a few weeks in order for these beetles to die. And so that hasn't happened since the 1980s out here. And so what we have to do is hope for cold weather and hope that nature does the job, because there's just too many. It's too big an area for humans to make a difference.
And what have humans done to make this possible? We were talking in the introduction about how part of this is because of human activity.
Well, the big thing is climate change. We've so warmed the planet that we don't get these cold weathers anymore, and so this beetle can spread far beyond its normal range. It's spreading all over the West. And the other thing we've done is suppressed fires. Now, fires would come along every 7 to 10 years and clean out a lot of the forest and reduce the number of trees. Well, what's happened is humans have stopped fighting fires over the last, or excuse me, have fought fires over the last 100 years. And what that's done is given the beetle more of a foothold, more trees to eat, and it's led to what they call a decadent forest, which makes the beetle more at home.
All right. Jim Robbins, I want to thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
That's Jim Robbins. He is the author of a piece on pine beetles in today's Science Times and the New York Times. And Mark Garrison is in to give us the latest news. He's sitting in for Femme Ioke. Mark?
Thank you. 22 minutes before the hour.